Hello, welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Today we're going to talk with Christy Redbenner, softball coach at Wichita State. She recently won career game number 300 for the Shockers, a 9-2 win over Kansas. Christy is now 303, 243-1 in 11 seasons. Do you remember the tie?
Oh, yeah, Central Florida.
Central Florida.
Last year.
Okay. Including 17-9 record this season, Christy is 11 wins away from passing Jim Maynard as the program's winningest coach. So we're going to take a little walk down memory lane, kind of talk about Christy's tenure here and bring up some good memories. So you came to Wichita State from Emporia State 2011 before the 2012 season. What do you remember about first order of business, getting things up and running the way you wanted to at Wichita State?
Well, year one was all about culture, changing the culture and creating, a hard work, blue collar culture of young women that wanted to push themselves and win championships. You know, that was something that was, a big slogan at the time with us being in the Missouri Valley and just especially just talking to Becky Endicott, who was a big part of the hiring process. For me was, you know, Wichita State, we win championships. And that's what they were looking for, is somebody that could come in and kind of bring a different perspective. Obviously they had some success under Tim Walton and just kind of lost their way a little bit. And so for me, it was culture and hired Samantha Sheely, Samantha Ricketts. And just between the three of us, we hit the recruiting trail pretty hard. And our number one kind of goal was to try to find student athletes that had a lot of success in some way, shape, or form. We knew we weren't going to get the top blue chip athlete right away. We were going to have to find the role players, the impact players that, you know, were maybe third or fourth best on the team, but on teams that were really good. First pickup for us was Brittany Fortner, and I think that was just a really quick turnaround. I mean, she ended up coming in and 2012, 2013 season and immediately made that little bit of an impact. And, you know, at this time, the transfer portal wasn't really, you know, something that anybody really looked to. We ended up picking up, I think, Laura Vickers in that next class who transferred in from Kansas. And so we had a few that could really kind of make the impact, but we had some talented kids on the current team. And it was just getting them to buy in and believe and understand what it takes to, you know, elevate your game and play under pressure but enjoy it at the same time. And so we had some tough practices. I mean, you know, I remember by the end of year one, we weren't very good. I think we finished the season 15-40, if I remember correctly. And we had 11 players. I mean, we had so many fluke things happen. We had a torn ACL. We had someone pulled a shopping cart, like a rack of carts or folding chairs, into the back of their heel and severed their Achilles tendon. We had one girl break her foot doing a warm-up game when we were at St. Louis U. One girl had a massive concussion. I mean, so by the end of the year, I just remember thinking, oh, my goodness, we have 11 or 12 healthy players, and they were still playing hard. And, you know, we started to turn the tide a little bit. And then we had quite a bit of, a couple of kids decided not to come back. And year two was just as tough as year one. I mean, when it came to wins and losses, but the culture was starting to change. We didn't necessarily have the talent that we needed from top to bottom in the lineup. But they wanted to win more. They were competing at a higher level. We were losing games closer than we were losing games in year one. And so you could start to see the tide change a little bit. And then obviously in 2013-2014 season, we brought in 8 freshmen and I think 2 or 3 transfers. And that was the difference maker for us. It took a little time. But those that came back and really stuck through it, I think that they appreciated it. They loved it. They saw that there was differences. They were starting to enjoy the game a little bit more. And we were out there competing and losing some heartbreakers. I mean, one series that really stands out in my head was the Illinois State series my first year. And I feel like we lost quite a few of those games. We were winning late in the game and ended up losing it late, you know, probably sixth, seventh inning. And Illinois State might have won the league that year. I mean, it was they were a top program, and we went to Illinois State, and that's where several of the injuries ended up happening, is on that road trip between SLU and Illinois State for spring break. And we kind of, to me, turned a corner there from a culture. You know, I thought that we definitely started competing and enjoying it, seeing that, you know what, we can compete with the top in this league. We've just got to get a few of these missing pieces, you know, throughout the lineup that can make a difference. And so to me, I think that was like, okay, that was, I can do this. You know, it was tough. You know, when I left Emporia, we had won, I think, 38 or 40 games every year in some year. I mean, we won 62 my first year. You know, and so then all of a sudden you're losing 40 games. You're thinking to yourself, man, what have I gotten myself into here? But they believed, and the staff believed, and they worked hard, and we figured out how to get the kids that, you know, could take us to that next level, and how to get the kids that wanted to stick with us, because it was totally different how we could make them better. And I think that they all bought in and did a good job.
We talked a lot about athletes. You know, they're going through a slump. Who do they talk to? What do they read to, you know, to help themselves? What did you do those first couple of years? Did you have somebody that you leaned on?
Yeah, you know, I think me personally, I just, you know, I was always a big talker to my dad, and he's somebody that, you know, could bounce some ideas off of. And my parents have always been really invested in my career and following the games. And, you know, it was just about, hey, you got to continue to keep moving forward and look for the positives. If you focused only on the negatives, you would have drowned. But we would look at what positive things happened in some of the losses, or, hey, this was a big win for our program, and kind of build ourselves on that. And I think that made a big difference for us. We read a series of books throughout that whole time, too, as a team. We did some different stuff with Jeff Jansen, who does a lot of team building and culture type stuff. John Gordon books. I mean, I know we've done the Energy Bus and the Carpenter and No Excuses and You Win in the Locker Room, just different books that have made an impact within our program and get you to kind of change your mindset on, like I said, you got to focus on that positive and build around that versus just constantly looking at what you could have done or the negatives or the errors you made or things like that. And so I think that's kind of what kept you level-headed a little bit.
You mentioned Becky Endicott, who was a longtime senior women's administrator here. She played softball, also a catcher, if I'm remembering right, at Emporia State. Mm-hmm. She's kind of top of mind because of the women's basketball tournament coming, big deal for women's athletics. Tell me about her role in hiring you and getting the softball program up and going.
Yeah, just a funny story, you know, something I'll never forget. You know, I was at Emporia. It was towards the end of the season. We were leaving for a big trip to go to Nebraska-Omaha. And Nebraska-Omaha had just entered our conference that year. And this was before, obviously, they transitioned to Division I. And their travel partner was Missouri Western. And for whatever reason, that trip, I was riding in a vehicle with somebody to Topeka. My, I think, volunteer assistant needed to drop her car off. And so the bus had taken off. And I was kind of waiting with her, and we were meeting wherever for lunch to grab something and dropping her car off. And a car rolled in to Trussler Sports Complex, and a lady gets out. She says, "Hey, Christy, I'm so-and-so, and I played here." And I said, "Oh," and she goes, "I was wondering if I could take a quick tour. I just was driving through and thought maybe I'd catch you." And I was like, "Yeah, we got to leave here in a little bit, but I've probably got 5-10 minutes. I can show you around a little bit." And we had had a new locker room put in 2000, and I think 2007. And so she hadn't seen it yet, wanted to take a peek. And so her and I are walking around Trussler Sports Complex. And she said, "Hey, you know, I live in Wichita." And I said, "Oh, yeah." And she said, "Would you ever consider making the leap to Division I?" And I said, "You know what, I've had some opportunities here at Emporia State, and we've had success, and, you know, I love it here. It's a great culture and great department. I had an awesome recruiting class coming in that next year." I said, "I don't know. I mean, I'd always look and see if it's an opportunity for me to continue to grow. But I said, I'm pretty happy here, so it'd have to be a really good fit." And she goes, "Well, I was kind of sent here to gauge your interest, to see if you'd be interested in a job that's about 80 miles from here." And I kind of looked at her, and, you know, me at the time, I was so aloof. I was like, "Well, Kansas City is longer than that, you know, and then I kind of figured it out and I kept it to myself. I didn't really say a whole lot. I talked to my parents, I think, about it. And then sure enough, as soon as our season at Emporia State ended, you know, Becky had reached out to me and Eric Sexton came right up to Emporia, took me out for lunch at Bruff's and basically said, hey, we'd like to offer you this job. We've been following your career, and obviously Becky had an invested interest in Emporia State, apparently had come and watched us play several times that season to just kind of take a peek at how I coached, and, you know, and so it's kind of endearing to see that, you know, they felt that taking that Division II to Division I leap would be a big part of it. I think Darren Boatwright at the time was our associate athletic director and had reached out to Patrick Murphy, who was like, you've got somebody in your state that could probably do a pretty decent job. And so, you know, all the stars aligned. And, you know, I think a week later I was on campus doing an interview and offered the job and took it. And, you know, it was a big jump for me, but an awesome one. And, you know, I'm thankful every day to Eric and Becky for giving me a chance. And I knew it was going to be a challenge. And, you know, I think, you know, it was something new and fresh for me to really focus in on. And, you know, here I am 11 years later.
So Becky sent an emissary.
Sent a spy. Yeah.
Very good. Working behind the scenes. I like that. Bruff's, that's the Emporia landmark downtown, right? Right, yeah. By the Civic Arena.
No, you're probably thinking of Bobby D's. Bruff's is right on the side of 35. It's kind of a tin building that sits by the hotels. Mm-hmm. Bobby D's Barbecue is probably the landmark right over there from a restaurant standpoint. That's pretty good by the arena.
I think Bruff's used to be downtown.
It may have.
I'm going to have to check my Emporia trivia, because I think I've eaten there when it was downtown. Did you have a timeline for, you know, landmarks you wanted to set, any kind of timeline in your mind when you started?
Not really. I think the ultimate goal was to try to be in the top half of the conference by year three, where we felt like we were bringing in, you know, a bigger chunk of our recruits. You know, we were a little late to the game in that 12-13 class, and so we didn't feel like we – you know, had as big of an opportunity to evaluate and convince, you know, kids to take a chance on us. And so we felt like year three was the time period for us to say, okay, we are no longer ninth or eighth. We should be in that top half and then continue to keep progressing.
Well, Casey Williams joined the team for the 2014 season. I would mark her as maybe one of the more pivotal recruits. She was ended up winning Valley Player of the Year twice. I think she left. She was a home run leader, probably the RBI leader. Seemed to just bring a real talent and a physical presence to this program. Describe her impact on the program.
Yeah, huge. You know, I had recruited Casey to Emporia State, and obviously she played there, was the freshman of the year, I believe, in her freshman year, and then had suffered an injury her sophomore year and ended up redshirting. And, you know, I'd heard kind of rumors that she was unhappy and ended up leaving the team, and then she reached out. And we didn't have much to offer her that first year, which, you know, I'm so thankful that we had a little bit to offer her and convinced her to come. But, I mean, an immediate impact player. I think just the energy that she plays with, the love of the game, that was what we were missing. You know, was that energy, that, you know, what gritty, determined, you know, I'm going to take the biggest hack in the world. And if I run into it, you better look out, because it's going to be leaving the ballpark quick. And, you know, I think she was one that was a big part of it, but a lot of that class was very much like that. And I think we always laugh and reference, but, you know, in that particular year, the girls had a little bit of a powwow in the early part of coming back from summer. And it was the eight freshmen. And, you know, I'm trying to think of it. Liz Broyles came in, which was a good pickup for us. And I don't remember if it was two or three transfers in that particular year. But they ended up being a group that got together early, had this barbecue. And some of our returners are like, yeah, we're not very good. You know, like Coach B wants us to be good. We haven't been able to be very good. And that freshman class said, look, here's the deal. We're going to be good. Like, we're going to change it. We've all won. We want to be the difference makers here. And kind of, you know, you look at it and you could have gone two different ways. There could have been some infighting between our returners and that big class. But instead, I think it rejuvenated our returners. And they were like, okay, I can jump on this confidence and be a part of this. And so people like Sloane Anderson and Melanie Yeagers and Erin Carney and Lainey Greenlee and, you know, those kids that, you know, their freshman and sophomore years maybe weren't what they were wanting them to be, ended up becoming a little bit more rejuvenated and fired up with this crew that had this confidence. And they did it. You know, you look at people like Paige Llewellyn, who had a great freshman campaign, Kelly Spring, fantastic freshman campaign. And you can't not talk about the pitching. You know, Katie Armagos and Sloan are basically our only pitchers in 2012, 2013. And then all of a sudden, Katie graduates, Sloan comes back, and you've got Jenny Brooks. You've got Katie Malone, who was a late add, was actually committed to Butler County and had reached out and worked out great for us to kind of sneak her in. But, you know, that crew was talented, and they were fun to watch. Macklin Hitz was a kid that had a lot of potential and came in and worked hard. And, you know, so it was little things here and there that I think made impacts, but it was that specific big class in 2013, 2014 that had the confidence to come in and want to change the culture to a more winning culture than just a, hey, here we are, we're Shockers.
So that 2014 team went 34-21, went 21-6, won Wichita State's first MVC title. And then also, that was a lot of the roster that went to the NCAA Regional in 2016. What kind of defined that team and that group on the field? What made them click?
They had great team chemistry. I'm such a big believer in chemistry over talent sometimes to get you to that next level. And you know, the talent was there. That was what we were, you know, we were lacking in certain areas, and it finally was consistent 1 through 9 in the lineup. But they worked hard. They wanted to be champions. They wanted to make softball relevant here at Wichita State, because at that time when you looked around, baseball was strong, volleyball was strong, track and field, tennis, golf, everybody was winning the Valley championships, and softball wasn't. And you know, that's what they wanted to change. They looked at that motto of we win championships, and they wanted to be a part of it. And I think that that crew really took that to heart, worked hard. I mean, we think now, and I look back, and, you know, at the time, I ran all of our conditioning. You know, we kind of bounced around a little bit with strength coaches because we were really understaffed in that area at the time compared to now. And so I ran all the conditioning, and I'll tell you what, we were in the best shape ever at that time. I mean, they ran a bunch, and probably to, I wouldn't say to their detriment, but it ran off the people that didn't want to work hard. And it made them understand how much hard work that they put into this, the blood, sweat, and tears, the hard days. And I think that motivated them at the end to really bond as a group, but also to not give up and believe in themselves that they were prepared. And you know, after 2014, Samantha Ricketts left and left and went to Mississippi State. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to pick up Nicole Hudson Entz at the time. And, you know, another great hitter with a great hitting perspective. And, you know, I think we were just able to continue to grow and become an offensive minded program. And the pitching at the time was good enough to really keep us into games and really win some big ones for us. And they were just a fun group to be a part of. I think they knew they were changing the tide, and they took a lot of pride in it.
Went down to Norman, beat Tulsa for the program's first NCAA regional victory. How has your coaching philosophy, your techniques, how have they changed during your time here at Wichita State?
Well, if you ask the girls that were on the 14 and 16 team, even Lori Ann Derrico, who played in 18 and 19, I've gotten a little softer, you know. I think you have to always evolve. You know, I think student athletes change every year, and there's more distractions. There's more, you know, opportunities for them. I mean, you look between 2014 and this 2021 team that we had last year. I mean, NLI's become a part of it. Social media's become a bigger deal. Phones are everywhere. You know, there's so many things. Technology has grown. And so I think I've probably gotten a little bit softer, but I also think that, you know, there's you have to understand your student athletes and understand what they need. And, you know, I'm still the same fiery coach that's going to yell at the umpires and, you know, take the warning when I need it and let them know, you know, and that I'm fighting for them to give them that confidence that they're doing something well. I'm still the same coach that I've been since I was at Emporia, where I take them down the line to try to motivate them a little bit. Sometimes it's a rah-rah motivation, and sometimes it's a get in your rear end a little bit because we're not playing well motivation. And it's just finding balance. You know, I think, you know, as we get older, that energy level has to be channeled in different ways. And sometimes you can wear yourself out being the person that has to provide the energy all the time. And I think that's the thing with our culture that has been important is that for a long time I had to provide a lot of the energy on the field and at practice and, hey, you know, get them to try to step up and have that same level of energy. Now they know that that energy matters, that it made a difference. And so they bring a lot of the energy. I don't have to bring that all the time. I can calm down and maybe take a couple extra years of my life later on to not wear myself out a little bit too much. But, you know, you have to evolve. I think that's the sport. That's, you know, working with young student athletes, young women, they're all going through different things, and there's always different buzzwords and social, you know, problems and things like that that everybody's dealing with. And as we continue to grow, you just have to evolve as a coach to figure out the best way to motivate and mold young minds. I mean, I have one of the best jobs in the world. I get to coach the sport I love, but at the same time, I get to help these young women be ready for life after college and to be strong young women to stand up for themselves and have a voice. And I think we've done that more in the last couple of years than maybe we had to do it in the first couple of years.
How about recruiting? How's that changed over your time here?
Oh, recruiting is probably the hardest. You know, I think that that's something that's definitely been the biggest challenge for us is that, you know, the Midwest was a gold mine and it still is a gold mine. And for a lot of years, the Power Five schools recruited Florida, Texas, California, and really stayed away from the Midwest. And then all of a sudden, teams in the Midwest started getting better and better and better. And I think you started seeing more Power Five schools start moving into the Midwest for recruiting and finding those, I like to say, blue collar, hardworking kids who have a bigger ceiling than maybe some that have, you know, that are playing outside 365 days of the year and, you know, maybe have a little less burnout and things like that. And so recruiting's become more difficult. You know, obviously the little things matter when it comes to the Power Five carrot and the facilities and, you know, just the strength of the program and who you play and things like that. And so we've benefited. We always play a tough schedule. We always get to play some big teams and things like that. The move from the Missouri Valley to the American has helped the recruiting quite a bit because it's opened the doors a little bit more nationwide versus just kind of in our nook that, you know, the Valley, that everybody knew the Valley. But I think the biggest challenge for us is now that we've expanded a little bit more and we've tried to go after big recruits, we still lose a lot of those recruits to Power Five schools because we don't dangle the biggest carrot out there, which is the status of playing in a Power Five institution. And so we still have to go out there and find the kids that want to work hard, that have a high ceiling, the Addie Barnards of the world that are from Beatrice, Nebraska, and maybe kind of got looked past because they don't necessarily stand out. Their travel ball team didn't necessarily stand out specifically in her recruiting time, but she was a phenomenal athlete. And you looked at her and you're like, ooh, that kid's got some things that, you know, we can do something with. And obviously the transfer portal has completely changed recruiting. I think there's a lot of schools that aren't recruiting as much incoming freshman type money, and they're saving money to try to just recruit the portal. And so, you know, we've had some amazing transfers in our time. I mean, you talked about Casey, Liz Broyles, Bailey Lang was a transfer. Sid McKinney is a transfer. Riley Buck was a mid-year transfer. You know, so you start looking, we've benefited in a big way from the portal. Zoe Jones is having a wonderful year this year, transferring from Tech. Obviously, Ariel ended up transferring but getting her injured, and, you know, hopefully we can get her back next year. And so, you know, we've benefited in that area as well. And I think that's a philosophy that we've taken on too, because one of the things I learned at a very young age in coaching is that you should never, ever be upset with a kid for choosing another school over you. You know, you might be upset when you get off the phone, but you should wish that kid the best of luck. You should tell them that you hope the best for them. And then you slide in that if it doesn't work out, you know where to find me. And I think that that's something that sometimes comes full circle, is that it doesn't always work out for every kid. And, you know, when they get into a program, or they're going so far away from home, or, you know, there's some things that cause them to not work out. And I've learned to always keep an eye on some of the kids we've gone after and kind of track their career in hopes that if maybe it doesn't work out for them, they would give Wichita State another chance. And that came full circle. Arielle and Zoe, both kids on our campus, and I think 2015, somewhere in there, they both picked other schools, and now they're playing for us. And, you know, I think that that's part of the recruiting process is, you know, you got to take, you know, we all take negative feedback or denials or what, however you want to call it. You got to take it with, you know, some pride and just say, look, here's the deal. If it doesn't work out, you look me up. We'd love to have you again. And you never know when that kid's going to come back and end up being an impact player for you.
So if a lot of the Power 5 schools are going to really hit the transfer portal hard, then does that open up a market inefficiency that schools such as Wichita State could take advantage of with high school athletes who maybe are not getting recruited like they might have?
I think so, but I think the portal's also a trickle-down effect. You see, you know, Power 5 schools dropping kids from their roster to add a kid from another, you know, somebody else's roster. And so it's kind of full cycle. You know, that's where we're ending up seeing, whereas maybe, you know, we might be recruiting a kid who is going to, you know, a Power 5 school in the Big 12. And I, in my head, know, okay, that kid's not going to play every day for them. We've played them for 10 years now. And I can tell you right now, that kid's going to be third off the bench or second off the bench or the fourth pitcher. They're not going to like their playing time unless they get a lot better. And some do, but some don't, you know. And so you keep an eye on that kid, because that kid who might be the fourth pitcher could be a number two for us, or could be a five-hole hitter, six-hole hitter, somewhere in there, or even bigger, because obviously there's some Power 5 programs whose bench is stellar, you know. I would take a lot of kids off of OU's bench and think they can make a pretty big, you know, impact into our program. So that's the way you kind of have to look at it. I don't know that I think it's opening up more doors for freshmen. I just think that it's a trickle-down effect in a big way, where they're creating roster openings so that they can get transfers, and those roster openings could end up being impact players on our program.
You mentioned Bailey Lang, who I would regard as a pretty pivotal recruit. She came here from Northern Iowa in 2018, and she had pitched there and had good numbers, but did she end up exceeding your expectations in the circle?
She was great. I mean, lefty arm, for one thing, right off the bat, was a game changer for us. Just a competitor, somebody that wanted to win and thrived within her second chance, and I think that's the one thing that when you take a transfer, you know, a lot of them are looking for a second chance. They're looking for the opportunity to either play more or just be in a different culture. And I think she thrived in both. I thought her 2018 season was remarkable. I mean, she beat Oklahoma State several times and won some big games for us, obviously. You know, going down to the last weekend in the conference for our first year in the American, we could have won the American, you know, and I can't remember if it's 2018 or 2019, but, you know, I look back at some of my worst decisions that I ever made. One of them was OU when we were winning 6-0. I took her out of the game when she walked the first two batters and put, you know, Kate in and put Kate in a tough situation. We ended up losing that game. It was the sixth inning and we were up 7-0. And then, you know, for whatever reason, I just allowed myself to get talked out of not starting Bailey Lang against South Florida in game two down in Tampa, where if we won game two, we tie to win the American. It's a tie between us and South Florida. But if they win the series, then we ended up in fourth place or something. It was so close. And we knew we weren't going to get Georgina in game two. We knew we'd get her in game three. And so for whatever reason, I let myself not throw her. And so, you know, two big decisions that I think really had a big impact on our program in a negative way. If I would have just stuck with Bailey, I think we would have won. And you know, I think that shows the amount of impact that she had in our program. I mean, she didn't have obviously in 2019 got hurt at Louisiana Tech and didn't have a great start in 2020. But I thought last year just really focused in on being her best and getting everything we could out of her being a super duper senior.
Take us through some of the wins that really are top of mind when you think about important moments for this program.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. Some of the best games that I was a part of were the Oklahoma State games that we played. 2018 in the regional down in Oklahoma State with Madison Perrigan hitting the two home runs and, you know, just being able to jump on them in the first game. I mean, those were, I think, program-building wins because it proved that, hey, this is a great program that we're playing against. This is only our second regional, second, third regional wins, and they were big ones. And getting to that championship game against Arkansas, I would say the same about Texas A&M, a team that you respect, who's got a legacy of making it to the World Series and beating them this past year. Winning the first Valley regular season, I thought was huge. That was at Illinois State. We ended up sweeping that weekend and clinching the Valley for us in 2014, which I think was the first time that we had ever won the regular season. And in 2016, clinching the Valley here against Carbondale and then winning the conference tournament was huge. I think that was kind of a monkey off of our back. But, you know, the wins, you look back and, you know, I can probably rattle off a bunch of them, but it's just the excitement that you see in the players, the fight, the fire, the confidence, the desire to change. I mean, last year winning the conference tournament against Central Florida was huge. And I thought that was, a tough game. You know, we had played them already four times. Because of COVID, and like you said, that last game went 12 innings, 0-0 ball game tie, and so you knew Central Florida wanted to win. They were upset that we had to call the game because of time and go to the airport because they had a runner at third with one out, you know, and you look at all the missed opportunities in that particular game for them. They had a leadoff triple in the sixth inning that didn't score. She got thrown out at third because she thought she left early and went back to the base and then took a lead, and it was a mess. And, you know, so you knew that they had it out for us in that particular game, and just no secrets between our teams. And I thought our kids played hard and had fun. We got down early and ended up coming back. And the long ball, you know, watching the home runs and the high chews, and, you know, just I think last year was a special year because 2020 was just – terrible. I mean, we didn't play well, and then you get hit with COVID, and you don't know is everybody going to get their year of eligibility back. And it took us a little while to kind of develop that chemistry again of having our kids back and understanding the adversity that COVID was going to bring with masks and social gatherings and things like that. And so you look at 2021 and all the adversity that we worked through, I think that was probably one of the most special years in this program's history.
So there have been some significant games with UCF. One of the games that I stand out in my memory, the doubleheader on a Friday to open the series, and Wichita State won both games on walk-off home runs.
By Paige Llewellyn.
Paige Llewellyn had one, and Lori Derrico.
Oh, yep.
Or no, Bailey Lang, the first one.
Okay.
Homer to win the game 1-9-8, and then Lori Derrico, homer to win the second game 5-4.
Okay, you're right. Yeah, Central Florida has always been a true competitor, definitely a big rival, I think, with us, just because there's a lot of similarities between our teams. I mean, scrappy, good pitching, but maybe not what they were known for. Now, I think they've gotten their pitching's really elevated since Cindy Ball's gotten there, but just scrappy and, I don't know. There was just something about them that I felt like it was this great rivalry. A lot of energy, a lot of talk, a lot of cheering. I mean, just to the end, especially. I remember that series. It was cold, and we were so thankful that it was cold because here they were coming up from Orlando, and they're freezing. And, you know, we worked through. They had one of the best pitchers we've ever faced, Aaliyah White, you know, a great competitor. And I believe that was her sophomore, maybe freshman year. She finished up last year. But just a lot of good competitive games against her in the Valley or in the American. And, you know, that's the difference in the American is that, you know, you look at some of those teams, Georgina Corwick is phenomenal. I mean, probably could be top five pitcher in the country. And, you know, single-handedly is putting South Florida in the top 25. And, you know, they're fun to play against. And they're, you know, you got to figure out ways to every single weekend to beat some really tough teams in this conference.
UCF will be back at Wilkins Stadium this season. That's the last series of the regular season, starting May 6th. Okay, the Shockers, we'll talk about this season. They're 17-9. They're number 46 in the RPI off this weekend, and then they play at number one Oklahoma on Tuesday and then open the home schedule on next Friday against Tulsa. How do you gauge this team's play over the first 6 weeks?
A little bit all over the place. We're fighting some pretty big adversity, some injuries. We've got two out with ACL tears and then one out with a shoulder. You know, we've had a few here and there with some bumps and bruises. I think, you know, just we're as consistent as the weather's been lately. You know, one day we can look phenomenal and the next day we can struggle a little bit. But, you know, I think and I hope we're starting to turn a corner with some consistency. I think the biggest thing for us to continue to have success is going to really be figured out in the circle. We've struggled up in the circle quite a bit. I thought we pitched fantastic against Kansas and Southeast Missouri State and Iowa and then again against Nebraska Omaha. And then I thought we pitched terrible this past weekend at the Oklahoma State tournament. And it was totally two different teams. You look at the stat line, I mean, walks, getting behind in counts, things like that were very apparent this past weekend. Whereas when we were at KU, we really worked ahead. We were efficient. And so it's going to be the make or break of our season, I think, is if we can find that consistency in the circle. I think we're hitting great. We're kind of numbers-wise, we're ahead of where we were last year. I think we've hit 52 home runs. Our batting average is almost was 340. You know, we're doing the things that we need to offensively. And then, you know, defensively, we're there. We're getting more balls put in play. So you're seeing our fielding percentage maybe be a little bit less than it was, but it's in the 970s, which is pretty good. And, you know, we've had some costly errors that we've got to clean up a little bit. But I feel good about this team. They've got the talent. We've got to find the confidence in the circle. And we need to, in our pitchers' minds, need to understand we're going to score runs. You know, we're gonna do the job offensively. And we're going to do the job defensively, you know, 99% of the time, in my opinion, or 97% of the time, I guess you could say. You know, if they can do their job and work ahead and counts and minimize some of the walks, which is what ends up leading to the biggest issues, then we can have some success. And, you know, they're working hard at it. They obviously don't want that type of outcome. And so we just got to figure those things out. And I think we can have a good second half of the season.
Who's been the most pleasant surprise?
Oh, man. I think, you know, for us, Allison Cooper in the circle has been a pleasant surprise. I think when she's on, she's very good. She's got some big wins against Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota. She kind of is the Big Ten, the one we look to when she throws against the Big Ten. Didn't have the best game against Nebraska, but they weren't technically a great matchup for her. You know, I think one of the biggest surprises is for me is Addie Barnard having another great year. It's really easy to get the sophomore slump and to have that pressure of after freshman year and having such a great year to replicate it. And you're seeing that with Sid and Addie. I mean, and so that's showing their athleticism and their just pure skill. They're both great athletes and really work hard at it and get it. And I think they're not making it as big of a deal as that some could with the numbers and the accolades. And, you know, I mean, every other day on Twitter, you know, there's something out there about one of them that's an awesome stat, and sometimes that can make you a little nervous. And I think they've handled their success really well, which has been awesome to see.
Hi, this is Rick Miuma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.